Hi, this is Katrina and Sass, and this is Zooming in the Lens podcast. It's adventures of spiritual dialogue with us from the streets of rock and roll into the shifts of perceptions. We hope Zooming in the Lens can bring us all together, sharing the stuff of life and practice, suffering and grace. And we're really grateful to all of you who might be listening to our rants with compassion and curiosity. For more information, visit us at functionalyogaonline.com. Hey, this is Katrina with Zooming in the Lens podcast, and we've got a special podcast for you. We're sitting here, Knights of the Round Table, with very, very good friends. We've got Tommy Stewart on drums. We got Pete Murray, lead vocals, and Rena Murray, backup singer, dance extraordinaire. And this is Katrina Chester. And I'm sitting around here with all my friends, and I thought, what better than to pull out one of my favorite people, Krishnamurti. Say hi, everybody. What is this, church?
Weird. I was just totally, entranced by your radio voice.
Who did you say I sounded like? All right, for anybody out there that's definitely over 40 and from the East Coast.
Carol Miller.
PLJ. Oh, yeah.
Come on. I met her at a bar mitzvah, and she was everything I thought she would be.
Because, of course, that's where you would meet Carol Miller, as a bar mitzvah.
Uh-huh, as a young boy, and I met her, I was like,
because you loved her?
I was infatuated with her voice.
Well, good. I guess that's like kind of a backhanded compliment then, huh?
Is it? Was I just...
No, I think it's just a compliment.
It's a compliment.
Oh, so just straight ahead?
Just going to make something feel ancient, that's all.
Yeah.
But that was, a long time ago.
Carol Miller. WPLJ. This is Carol Miller.
She played the Doors and stuff.
Oh, what an impact.
I was in a baby carriage.
Right.
I'm told.
I forgot the wink.
I don't remember this stuff. I'm so young.
It just seeps its way into your subconscious.
Yeah.
So we're all really creative people. I mean, Pete, in all seriousness, is an amazing front man for a band that I just absolutely loved. And... you know, Tommy's played around a lot, right?
In a band or two. Paid a few bills.
And I think the best part is we're all spiritual seekers. We're all people that practice yoga in and out of the asana world. A lot of alternative thinking and Eastern philosophies and... So, hanging out and being able to be in both worlds at the same time is kind of interesting. It's kind of like the past and the present mixed into one. And it's kind of cool because no matter where we go in those two worlds, we always have them together. And I know that, Pete, you and I have gotten into many conversations about I won't give that up right away. I'll just say that there's this great thing I wanted to actually read to the three of you that you don't know because I didn't talk to you about it prior. But I love what Krishnamurti is saying here about creativity. What's important, surely, is for you to find out. And to find out, your mind must be in a state of creative experience. Your mind must be capable of discovering, which means it must be completely free from all knowledge as to whether there is an ultimate reality or only a series of ever more extensive and significant experiences. But your mind is crammed with knowledge and information, with experience, with memories, and with that mind you try to find out. Surely, it's only when the mind is creatively empty that it is capable of finding out whether there is an ultimate reality or not. But the mind is never creatively empty. It's always acquiring, always gathering, living on the past or in the future, or trying to be focused in the immediate present. It's never in that state of creativeness in which a new thing can take place. As the mind is a result of time, it cannot possibly understand that which is timeless, eternal. So our job is to inquire not if there is an ultimate reality, but whether the mind can ever be free from time, which is memory, from the process of accumulation, the gathering of experiences, living on the past or in the future, that is, can the mind be still? Stillness is not the outcome of discipline, of control. There is stillness only when the mind is silently aware of this whole complex problem. It is such a mind that can understand if there is an ultimate reality or not. So deep, yeah, I know.
Whoa.
I know it is deep.
Need a nap after that.
I know. It is deep. So in my small mind, I'm going to say that I sort of sum this up to be, how in the world do you get creative with the mind so busy, so constantly thinking about the future? And especially in the record industry, as we've all been in, it's like the most creative we are is at the very beginning before we know about record deals and touring and publishing deals and all of that stuff. You're creative, you know, whether it's honest or not, who knows? I guess it depends on, you know, who you are and what you're doing. But then as it progresses, it's sort of like the more information you get, unless you have some sort of practice or spiritual mindedness, everybody that is creative and then in the industry to get paid to be creative is on the road of doom, because it's going to end, because the mind is just constantly being full.
Yeah, and you're constantly building off what you've learned along the way. That's almost impossible to shut that off.
Right.
I would think.
But isn't it also needed? Don't you need to have that chaos in there to extrapolate some sort of thought that a lot of other people can relate to?
I would say so, but what if you don't know how to get there? You know, like if you, I mean, for me, I can only speak for me that without a practice of some sort, without some sort of, okay, what do I do?
It's kind of like Kurt Cobain. I think he never had any kind of.
Perfect example. Mm-hmm. Totally perfect example. And I think a lot of artists are tormented because when you get to a certain place in creativity alone, mm-hmm. then you feel like you have to, you know, match what you did before. I mean, even so many book writers I read articles about, they're like, I mean, the J.K. Rowling's mm-hmm. woman who did Harry Potter.
Yeah.
She was freaked out how she was going to write the next one, because how do you beat the first one? So, right. I mean, everybody, even, let's just say this, even people that aren't maybe artists for a living, but are people that are trying to move up the ladder, it's like, how do you top yourself? Keep topping yourself. So I think you're right, Tommy. In my world, I would need it. But when I didn't have a practice and I would try to be creative and shut everything out, that's when it started to feel like a job.
Yeah, that's kind of that's like the magic. That's the it thing right there. I mean, I think, how many musicians do you think would look at the first song they ever wrote, which was probably the freest they ever were writing, and go, that's the best song I've ever written?
Huh.
Right.
I don't know if there would be, it certainly wouldn't be me.
Yeah.
I think the better songs are when you actually can kind of harness what you've learned and sort of filter out the distractions and just take it back to that initial creative process, but now that you've accumulated some knowledge about what you're doing and some confidence in what you're doing. Hmm. That makes any sense.
Yeah, definitely does. I mean, how did you do it, Pete?
Like my first song, I if you play that right now, I would probably leave. That was terrible, but there certainly was a magic about writing your first song and not really caring about anything other than the fact that you're actually writing a song for the first time. And that's magical. But then 20 years later, it's like, well, now I can write a song. I'm super focused writing a song, I think.
Is super focused good, though?
I was going to say, does that feel more satisfying?
Yeah, I guess it's a pretty fine line. Because you can get in your head real fast.
Right.
But not doing it as a profession anymore, I just don't really care, I guess.
Yeah.
But I do get trapped in feeling like I'm repeating myself all the time. That starts to bother me. But I think that it's all that knowledge that you accumulate along the way that starts to make what you're doing more magical. It's like you have you have more to say.
You can't take away the experience as the part of the equation that provides the substance. So you have to have that there.
Yeah, I think I think now to how different I might feel, you know, having a little more faith in myself. Because I see music and songwriting and being a lead singer so similar to, well, it should have been similar. That's a better way.
That's a good way of putting it.
Very similar to what I'm doing now.
But it wasn't, was it?
No, and it wasn't. It was totally my fault that it wasn't. Because to everybody else, it was. I don't mean the musicians. I mean
it's almost impossible not to fall into that trap because you're... Oh.
It's impossible to fall out of that trap?
Well, I think it's almost impossible not to get into your head along the way.
I think there's some amazing creative things that if you tap into spirituality and something greater than yourself, because I think that's the thing is like you tend to, as an artist, get really narcissistic, not because everybody loves you, because plenty of people don't love me and didn't love me. And
that's for sure.
Right.
Speaking of myself.
Yes, of course. I'm lucky you guys are even sitting in this room with me. But I think that if I was able to understand that creativity is, to me, you know how I call Katrina 1 and Katrina 2? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so okay. So for those of you who don't... Katrina 1 is the true you. I mean, in Hinduism, you'd say Atman and a Brahman, and Buddhism and Buddha nature, God. But that's that part of you that is never changing. It's been with you, you know, depending on what you believe. It's been with you for a long time. Katrina 2 is my personality, which was built up by all the roles and models I was given in life and, you know, geographically where I grew up and the friends and the teachers. And, you know, as Ram Dass says, it's your spacesuit and you zip it up and, you know, some people never unzip it again. But once you unzip it, it's kind of hard to zip it back up again. And I think if you could get a blend of the one and the two, I think that could be some incredible art. And I've heard Krishna Das, for those of you who don't know who Krishna Das is, he's a kirtan singer and he's a devotee of Neem Karoli Baba Maharaji. And I really feel not like he channels outside of himself. I very much feel like he's got, I mean, this is my languaging, not anybody else's, but I feel like he's got an understanding that there's some things in our twos that we'll never control because it's not about controlling it. And music is not really about controlling. And kirtan definitely is not about controlling. It's about devotion and offering up and, you know, the bhakti lineage. So I just imagine in a fantasy world where we could all have an understanding that our two is dancing, it's dance, and our one is ever present, just sort of there supporting and watching us. And if there was a nice balance between the two, I think, you know, creatively, you know, it's hard. You know, I went back and I sung with my band Lux just in August, and what an experience, man. It was just, it was so incredible. I mean, because we love each other, we're one of those bands that drove all the other bands that were needed separate tour buses, you know, then we drove them crazy because we were like, no, we're happy in a van all together. We did. We just loved each other and do now. Yeah. But
so how was it performing songs that you wrote so long ago? From a lyrical, like feeling the lyrics that you wrote that long ago.
Well, I have to admit, you know, we re-recorded Flying Too Near the Sun, and there were a couple of, you know, bits and of words that, that I slightly changed because, you know, the one thing I am not is I can't sing something that I don't believe.
Yeah.
I just am not good at it. I guess that's why I didn't really make it as a jingle singer. but it bought me a house, so that was cool.
Yeah, that was cool.
So I changed, like, instead of saying no at a time, I would say yes. Instead of saying don't, I would say do. And just those little tiny fixes, it made me see, you know, that it is all about perception. I don't look at when I wrote that song as wrong and now it's right. I look at it all as an expression of my two. It's all my, it's all what I've been given. I can't write from what I don't know. I'd be channeling otherwise. And I, you know, I don't really claim to be one of those people that ever channeled anything. But it was incredible. It was incredible because we did it for absolutely no reason.
Yeah. Did you guys play? You did play.
We recorded. I ended up playing with another band, a gig that, my drummer sort of talked me into doing. It was a private party, kind of just show up and do a couple songs kind of thing. That's actually what got me there. But what got me there emotionally to get me on the plane was Lux. And it was just, I mean, man, it was just far out. It really was. I decided to sing a bit of the Chalisa for the guys. And they mixed it into the intro and the outro. And it was just sort of this kind of coming home. Like, I looked at them and I thought, I don't care who you are, what you've done, whatever, I'm accepting of you and they're accepting of me. And I had a picture of Maharaji while I was recording, and they were sort of going along with it and very respectful of the whole thing. And I was respectful of them. And I guess my point in the whole thing is,
so when you guys did all get along in that van.
Oh, we really did.
That's awesome.
Oh yeah. No, we really did. Yeah. We really did. It was quite an experience, and I'm really, really lucky. But I found that when you have no agenda, and this speaks to a lot of Eastern thinking, when you have no agenda, you have so much creativity. It's coming out of your ass. I mean, that is it. We had no agenda and no result in mind.
Yeah, that's the perfect scenario.
It sure was. And if we had any more time, we probably would have sat there and in 7 days written a whole record. But it's the agenda that does it. If you weren't given an agenda, if you didn't think you know, years ago needed a record deal, wanted a record deal, can you even put yourself in that place?
I mean, I did years later, and it was the most fun I've ever had.
Wow.
But that's an age thing too. I mean, I've accepted that is not going to happen.
And what if you did though at 25?
Yes.
What kind of great music or shitty music? Like, what would it have been?
I was too young. I was totally sucked into where we were going with it. I was never totally free writing music because, yeah, you're always worried about, well, how does this fit in with what's going on right now? And yeah, I definitely got trapped in that. I mean, some of the early songs I wrote, I just was writing because I love to do music, but it just seems kind of, you'd be a superhero if you could turn that all off and just write music, just to write music.
Don't you think the really greats did? Mm-hmm. Like, and the really greats probably died, you know? Like, I can think of Jeff Buckley for one. I don't think he was doing it.
Yeah, like how many bands or artists that have a meteoric rise are truly amazing artists when you think about it?
Mm-hmm.
Like they've written songs that are huge and they've made tons of money, but they're not like the greats. To me, the greats were always, you know, bands that would come out with a record that was completely different from their last one, even though the last one was a huge success and everyone wanted to hear that again.
Right.
They would change completely.
So it's being willing to be vulnerable and take risks.
And that doesn't happen anymore. That's what I miss the most about music, I think. I mean, every Zeppelin record was completely different than the last. U2 did some ridiculously crazy stuff.
Radiohead.
Went down some crazy paths, whether it was, you know, the smart business thing to do, quote unquote. Those are the greats to me. But it doesn't happen.
Well, you know, I do think that it takes personal responsibility, though. Like, we didn't do it, you know? And I mean, I'm not ever in a state of regretting it. But when I look around at the state of, and it's not like it's a bad state, because I don't want to sit here like my parents saying, you kids with your rotten kids with your music playing it so loud. Because I don't really feel that way. I feel like music is a reflection of every generation and maybe micro generation underneath that. And I mean, it's all cool. I really do feel like that. Some I can tolerate better than others, but
yeah.
But I think that it has to start with us. It has to start with us, which is why I wanted to do this podcast about doing things with no agenda. And trying to find creativity by even embarking on your day job. I'm not talking about stuff like, well, if I go to my day job and I just say to my boss, hey, dude, I got no agenda, so sorry, pay me anyway. I mean, obviously, that's not going to work. But what if you were just happy where you were and your job was your duty? It was your dharma. It was your caste system. Like in the Gita with Arjuna.
Yeah, I think I try to do that. I mean, every day is a new opportunity to do something. It may not be changing the world, but you can do something small just to embrace another day on the earth, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you don't feel like you're settling?
I think if you feel like you're settling, well, where is that coming from, though? Is that based on what you other people are saying that you should be doing, or is that how you truly feel?
Right.
What if it just something really small and simple is good enough?
That's right.
Yeah.
I do think that that is it.
I think that, yeah. But there's so much pressure coming at you all the time to not feel that way. Because you're not, I don't know, contributing to the system, I guess.
Right.
If you're just content with the small things.
Do you think it's that? Do you think it's not contributing to the system?
Well, I think that's where the pressure comes from, that you're bombarded with every day.
You mean, in what regard? Like, you mean, like, work a job and make it, and make a lot of money kind of?
Yeah, pressure? Buy a lot of shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, like, there isn't a lot of emphasis on just enjoying just the little stuff. And that can be good enough.
Yeah, what an incredible concept, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. If I'm happy doing just small things, then who cares what kind of car I drive and that kind of stuff. But you're pummeled with the opposite all day long.
Yeah.
Every day.
And it's the other way around, the emptying out. You know, that's the name of that. Krishnamurti, creatively empty. You're trying to empty out. You're not trying to do anything, but the eventuality is that you're shedding things because you no longer need all the external to constantly fill up this hole inside of you. That's not really a hole inside of you. It's that you don't feel right unless you're doing that because that's the societal pressure.
Yeah, you don't know any better yet.
That's right.
And then all of a sudden you start to know better. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I just crammed all this shit in there that I didn't need. You spend a lifetime shedding it.
Yeah.
That's grim.
It's like it's actually not, though, because...
Or just carrying it around.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just hauling it.
Well, you know, I love that you have to become somebody, or you have to be somebody to become nobody. And, you know, our culture is giving you gold stars for being somebody. And so maybe that benefits us in a way because we're all born as somebody. I mean, we're all born as somebody because our parents want us to be somebody. Oh, you're somebody and you're either somebody special or you're somebody intelligent or you're somebody gifted or whatever it is, but you're somebody.
You're a problem child.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But to become nobody...
That's the dream, right?
That's the most enlightening thing that I've ever done.
Yeah.
And I've played in front of 30,000 people.
Sure.
And that's the most creative thing I've ever done.
Becoming nobody.
Becoming nobody.
I love that.
Yeah. It really is the most inspiring thing ever. Because nobody can take that away from me because it's already nothing.
Yeah.
Not that I'm doing it because I'm in fear of somebody taking it away. It's just a natural progression when you really develop that faith that, like, what could go wrong with nothing?
Whatever you allow to go wrong,
I guess. Whatever you perceive is wrong.
Yeah.
And... there can't be wrong unless there's right. So you got to know both. That's why the somebody is important. The somebody-ness can take you to the nobody-ness. If you were born and you were nobody already, the whole journey of life would just end up being, it wouldn't be nearly as juicy as it is now.
It wouldn't be nearly as juicy as trying to become somebody but ending up as nobody.
And it's the exact opposite that we all grew up like.
And feeling lucky to be nobody.
Yep. Check this out. You might dig this. Oh, this is another really good one. But no, I'm talking about this one here. So Kierkegaard, right? And he was a philosopher, existentialist, like the 1800s. Life is a masquerade. Your occupation consists in preserving your hiding place. In fact, you are nothing. You are merely a relation to others. And what you are by virtue of this relation. When the enchantment of illusion is broken, when existence begins to totter, then too does despair manifest itself as that which was at the bottom. Despair itself is a negativity. Unconsciousness of it is a new negativity. This is the sickness unto death. Did I lose anybody?
Wow.
Translate that. Come on, Reen. Translate it.
No.
So you're saying life is a masquerade. Your occupation consists in preserving your hiding place. Enough said. Done. Enough. See you later. Bye. Yeah,
mic drop.
Yeah. Mic drop. Totally. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all a hiding place. Mm-hmm. Everything's a hiding place. Somebody want to check that? In fact, you are nothing. This is exactly what we were just talking about. He's not saying you're nothing, like you're a piece of shit and you're as low as...
No.
No. Explain that to the people listening. What does he mean when he says that?
Well, no one's anything. Until your ego tries to make you something. We're all nothing.
Is that depressing?
Only if you think it is.
It's freeing.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
I would think it's freeing.
Yeah.
Yeah, the desire to be something, quote unquote, is all external. It's put upon you to want to be something.
Well, and can't you be something, but you still are nothing?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's what's happening right now. We think we're something, but we're really nothing.
We're really nothing.
That's, we're living that.
Yeah, when the enchantment of illusion is broken, then too does despair manifest itself as that which was at the bottom. Despair itself is a negativity.
It's dark.
I know. I'm sorry. I like dark. I was an Emily Dickinson fan as a young child. Unconsciousness of it is a new negativity. So being, it's not bad enough that you're, we're all thinking we're somebody, but we're unconscious of all the potential. Like we were talking about tonight when we had all had dinner about this TED TV talk, you know, the neuroscientist talking about our existence is here, really what we are seeing, our perception, like what we're able to see is all based around the inborn requirement, lack of a better word, to procreate. So we're only seeing that which is going to aid in that. And so they were talking about this brown beetle and how this brown beetle would go around trying to mate with anything that looked brown.
Budweiser bottles.
Right, and shiny. And so in one part of the country, I think it was, they had beer bottles that looked a lot like when they landed on it, like maybe it could be a female brown beetle. So the population of the beetles went down in this area because all the male beetles were on top of the brown bottles. And I mean, that'll give you a hangover, but that's about it. And it must have
made him feel like nothing.
Yeah. Well, good, right?
If you're having sex with a bottle, you're not contemplating your own existence.
No. No, no, okay. But he was using that as an example.
Yeah, yeah, I know. Well, that was about
that they're seeing
how the brain interprets what the eyes see.
Yeah, it's all about perception. Yeah. And so to that brown beetle,
that all ties into what your perception of yourself is.
That's right.
Yeah.
Something or nothing.
Something or nothing, or should you care or not? Do you...
Depends on what time it is.
Right.
Do you care what you're... What are you concerned about what you're supposed to be? Or is it truly what you think you are? Or are you just happy knowing that you're nothing?
Yeah.
Again, free.
Yeah.
I mean, well, I remember...
Take the pressure off. Just at that point, you don't have to be uptight about it.
I remember a time when if somebody would have said to me, you're nothing, that...
You'd take it as an insult.
Oh, my word, yeah.
Kick their ass.
Of course.
So certainly there's an age thing there, too, yeah. Where you just get a
little
older.
It just doesn't land on you anymore.
I don't know for me if it's age, if it's more just practice. I mean, I really felt something when I heard these words at the right time in my life. And
yeah.
I was primed for it, and it felt... Right. It didn't sound right. I didn't, when I thought about it, it seemed completely wrong, but it felt right. So there's the one and the two right there.
You've also had a pretty lengthy set of experiences leading up to this that maybe opened your mind for those words.
Yeah.
Too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Lox's first record had been massive and you were some pompous pop star,
right?
Would you want someone telling you, well, dude, you're nothing. So what do you care? Just write a song to write a song. Who cares whether anyone thinks it's good?
Yeah, right? Who knows what would have happened?
You beat it.
I've never been more grateful that I completely failed.
Yeah.
Because it is. It's just what happened, and that's what it is. And I mean, I'm not sitting here saying I don't got a million things going on like everybody else does. Of course I do. But now I just see it slightly as a little bit more of a benefit, I guess. However contrived that might sound, it starts to feel like that a little bit. Somewhere deep inside me, my brain is still going, this sucks, and why is this happening to me? But it's just not as long-lived. I'm sure you two feel the same.
Yeah. I got lost in thought.
Well, you know, I think as a culture, we're always trying to get more and get more and get more and know more and know more and know more. I'm really guilty of always wanting to know more, know more, know more. But it really is, I'll quote Tommy Stewart right now, it really is in the feeling. It's not in the thinking.
Yeah, I think it's like the whole describing someone who's as being rich who maybe doesn't have any money necessarily, but they're rich.
Right.
Nothing to do with money. It's kind of the same thing.
Mm-hmm. And isn't it funny too though, that there's like all these movies out there that people love? They love the movies where the person has nothing, but they're this like samurai behind the scene. And we love those movies.
Super enlightened one who has nothing.
Right.
Yeah.
We do. Well,
I think that we relate to that because that's our true nature, right? All the other stuff is being sold on top of us, and we're being told what to wear, what to eat, how to act.
Yeah.
And it's hard to get away from that because it's on top of you 24/7.
I think a lot of successful people are, you know, once people smell a little money, then you're just completely piled on with that stuff and they maybe never even realize what they have. Then they just want more all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they say that money doesn't really buy happiness. It does buy happiness up to $75,000, honestly.
Yeah, I know. I've read that study too.
And then after that, it just, no one's ever any more happy the more that they have.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, who's to say there's some people who are, you know, have one meal a day, who maybe don't have the luxury of having these thoughts.
Right.
No, it's just different ways of. I mean, I guess there's a time when I'm glad that all the bad and the good have taken me to where I am today. I know I feel lucky about that. I don't know if I feel blessed about it.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a good way to put it, though.
It's also easy to say that because this is where you are. So you have to kind of be comfortable with it.
I know many people that are not.
Really?
Oh, my word. Yeah. Don't you?
Yeah. I mean, the alternative is to just really resent where you are. That doesn't work.
People do.
The angry guy misses everything.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Just always bitter all the time. You're not going to enjoy anything.
Right.
Even all the beautiful, simple stuff. It goes right by your nose all the time. Like the color of the sky when you're sitting on the 405 in traffic.
Yeah. And I know you laugh too. I know we all laugh at that, but it is true that everything we really need kind of is here. We're always looking for these magical moments or UFOs or ghosts or magic. And the fact that we're even sitting here and this blood is running through our veins and our hearts are beating and we have absolutely no control or knowledge of it. And, you know, my cats are here in this room with us right now. And like, they're just incredibly, holy shit. Like to watch them move. I mean, Rena took some videos of a new kitten and put it in slow motion, and you get to watch the movement in slow motion of this kitten jumping up and then landing on all four, what do you call them? Paws, I guess. Yeah. Legs, paws. Yeah.
Hooves, I think.
Hooves, right. I mean, there's so many things that are incredible right here, right now, but yet it's still not enough. We want to go to Great Adventure or whatever and go on crazy rides and do all sorts of crazy shit all the time because we just want more and need more and need more and need more. But even emotionally, we need more. Mm-hmm. I mean, divorces and I need this and I'm going to not live here. And the reason why I'm not happy is because it snows 6 months out of the year. And, you know, I can't stand the cold or I can't stand next? The heat. Yeah.
Yeah. What's next?
Yeah. What's next? Nothing's next. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do? Mm-hmm. The next movement you make it as if you're never going to make another movement again. What are you going to do?
Good question.
If you hear that, that's my senior
that is
pigeon.
Rejecting her current situation.
Yeah, Pigeon's doing a little bit of a row.
What's next?
Forced to have a little brother. Pigeon, you're nothing.
Yeah, Pigeon, you're nothing.
Embrace it.
But she's being nothing.
Now you have a partner being nothing.
That's right.
You can share this amazing opportunity with.
Share nothing.
Good luck.
Share nothingness.
Good luck selling her on that idea.
Yeah.
You want to hear my favorite quote for the last 2 weeks? I must have said it like, 20 times already. I just love it. I don't know. Maybe you won't love it.
Let's hear it.
An intellectual who is proud of their intellect is like a prisoner proud of his cell.
That's pretty awesome.
I mean, doesn't that just say, I mean, substitute it with anything. A rich person that's proud of their money. Right?
I would argue they're not rich at all.
A person that's proud of the way their partner looks is like a prisoner proud of a cell. A musician proud of their gold records and their Grammys is like a prisoner proud of his cell. A prisoner proud of his cell. Hey, guys, check out my cell. 4x4.
Nice iron work.
Right.
Good concrete job.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good one.
But shift your perception. This is something Ram Dass said in some lecture that I just think about all the time. You go on retreat for, you know, months at a time and you sit in a room. People bring you your food. People, you don't get to talk to anybody. You don't leave the room. You're not doing anything. You don't have books. You don't have TV. You don't have cell phones.
Prison.
Yeah. And then look at the guy in prison. And he feels trapped. But the other guy paid for this retreat. But they're doing the exact same thing.
Yeah.
So that's perception. Mm-hmm. I mean, to one guy, it's fantastic. And to another guy, he can't get out of there soon enough. So it really does glorify life is what you make of it. But we all need the tools in which to do that, you know? I mean...
Yeah. The door has to be open for you.
I'm so sick of those memes that are flying all around everywhere that are just these one-liners and...
Except for the latest one that you sent me.
Oh, man.
Hilarious.
You want to read that out loud? Yeah. I don't know if we should, but...
Oh, I think we've already gone down that road.
I don't really want to check that explicit box in iTunes, though.
Really?
I mean, I guess so.
It's really good. Okay. Trying to be less of an asshole than I was yesterday. Baby steps. Fuck you.
That's a good one. I like it.
Yeah.
But just, that person has started down the road, so that's, you should be happy about that.
Totally. Totally.
Good start. Better than where you were yesterday.
That's right.
Just being an asshole.
That's right.
So I wanted to read this Joe Rogan quote.
Please do.
Because I thought it was freaking awesome. I'm not a huge Joe Rogan fan, but he said, do what you love because society is a trap and work is meaningless.
Well, that's pretty pointed.
That's pretty good.
Do what you love.
Because society is a trap and work is meaningless.
Wow, that's pretty direct.
He's making some broad statements, though.
Like, yeah, because he is, and the practical person in me, who is not creative like you guys, but is the spreadsheets gal, says, easy for you to say, guy with big salary.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I think he's missing the point of life. I don't think anything is meaningless.
It depends on what you're talking about, work.
Well, it's not the work. It's the person doing the work.
Yeah.
That's what it is. So any work can be that. If you're going to be a shitty person, then be a good shitty person. Be shitty. Know you're being shitty. Do your job. I mean, you know, if it was all about how great your job was, that's why we're all, you know, bouncing job to job to job to job. We all don't know what we want to do. There is nothing to do. That's why we don't know what we want to do. Nothing to do.
Just passing the time.
There's a lot of people out there having you do nothing, then.
Say that again?
There's a lot of people that have jobs that are essentially, you're saying, or people are doing nothing in a job, right?
I'm saying, no, I'm not saying that. I'm saying you're doing nothing at a job if you're at a job and you hate your job and you think you're doing nothing. That's when you're doing nothing. That's your choice.
That is your choice.
That is your choice.
Yeah, you can't really point at someone else and say, you know, that's your opinion. If you don't like what they're doing for a living. Maybe they do.
Right.
Maybe they do. So who are you to say, dude, your job is meaningless? But not to me.
Right.
It's all meaningless. I like my job.
Yeah. And if I saw any proof that, oh, I'm doing this job because I want to get to the next job, and then somebody got to the next job and they were like, nope, this was it.
This was it.
This was it. I'm good.
I got there.
And it's never happened. I've never seen anybody I know somebody that taught me very early on. He said he went to medical school and after he got out, he got a practice and he just wanted to make his first million. That's it. And then he was good. And he would just keep that million. And every time, every year, I don't know, make a million and that'd be enough. And he said, I was never more full of shit in my life because I made the million and then I wanted to make two. And then after the two, I wanted to make three. And I know, like, millions. Oh, my God, we're sitting here like that would last us a lifetime.
Mm-hmm. A couple.
But it's all about your perception and your relative reality. But if I just saw somebody that literally had this plan and knew that the next place they were going to get, that was it, and it really was, I'd say, yeah, I'm all in. But I have never. The aha moments that I'm seeing in my teaching, at least, are the times when people who have been doing a job for 30 years and they leave it because they just finally go, you know what? This is just not how I want to spend my last 30. And I'm not saying everybody should quit their job. Of course not. But if you can't practice through it, which is another way of saying, if you can't find value and work on yourself and make your practice your work, then it is for nothing. And if it is for just money, it's in your mind that it's just for money. You can make it for more than money.
Yeah. Yeah, the
power is all yours.
What kind of advice would you say to somebody out there that wants to hear from a legendary rock star?
Who fell a little shy of making a living at it.
But Pete, you're so talented, it's ridiculous.
I don't really care anymore. I think a weird thing for me is that I realize, and it took a little while, there was definitely a period of kind of bitterness because, you know, when I fell off the train and then all these people that I had sort of been cruising along with kept going down and having careers and all that. And then, so I got blinded by that for a while and was bitter about it until I realized that I don't envy any of those people. There isn't a single one of them that I'm like, man, I wish I were that dude right now. There are very few people that we were making music with that I'm like, wow, I got so lucky. I wish that were me. And the things that I look at in their careers that I would love to do, I know that they don't really even appreciate. The traveling part, you know, not seeing an opportunity in every new town that you walk into mm-hmm. to meet different people and to see a new place.
Right.
They all want, you know, they are pissed because they can't find Starbucks in 2 minutes or whatever. So right. I've never really met anybody that truly gets it, I feel like, because they get in that trap where they're always looking to the next single, usually to pay off a bunch of bills that they wasted their money on.
Or pyrotechnics.
Or the bigger show or whatever it is. Yeah, they just kind of get sucked up in everything other than the music. That was my experience in it, anyway.
Do you feel like you could find some compassion for them now?
Oh, I definitely have. Yeah, for sure. I have compassion for all of them. Even, ones that I, hated years ago. But I don't feel that way anymore. I mean, I
How'd you get there?
I would have to say it was, I guess you could say it was the practice, but also from failing, I think. From getting knocked off that ride and going, oh, what was I really doing there anyway? What was I really after? I don't think I ever really knew. So even if I'd gotten it, I wouldn't have appreciated it either. It's easy to say now, but if I got the opportunity now, would I get lost in that whole rat race again, knowing what I know now? I don't really know. Yeah, but it's weird. I wasted a lot of time being bitter about people that I realized, I don't miss any of those people. I don't wish them any ill will, but I don't miss them in my life. And I hope they are doing great. But either way, it doesn't really matter anymore. Who cares? We're all just out here trying to figure it out.
Right.
So.
Share with us a little bit about the practice you guys do, which is Ashtanga, mm-hmm. for anybody that doesn't really know what that is.
Ashtanga's, there's 8 limbs to Ashtanga, and I'm...
What's a limb?
I'm primarily focused on the physical asana, which is one of the 8 limbs. Pranayama is another one. I've done that. And I've adopted Ahimsa as much as I can.
Which is?
Nonviolence. There's still 5 other ones that I have barely even touched. So I don't ever look at myself as like, an authority on my practice or anything. But just having a devoted yoga practice and a guru and it's a baseline for me, I think. It's like a starting point for every day. It's always it's like a grounding every day. That's kind of important for me, I guess.
And how do you feel, there's lots of discussions about to have a guru. Do you need a guru? Why do you want a guru?
I have a guru because he's a few miles from my house, and I realize that that won't be the case forever. So I think I'm in a unique perspective where I don't... I mean, I, I don't lean on my guru very hard, I wouldn't say. But I'm blessed to have this person in my life. So I just take advantage of that because I can right now. And that may not be the case forever. But I'm not going to take a step back and go, all right, now I've got to get away from my guru and see if I can do this on my own, because I'll probably get to that point at some point in my life anyway. So It's, I've got it now. Why would I not take advantage of it? So I don't know.
You think people need gurus to get there?
Not necessarily. No, I mean, I don't, no, you can get there by yourself. It's a blessing to have it, have a guru, but I don't think you need one. And if you rely too heavily on one, that's not good either. It's just I don't really know how to express that.
Do you feel like it's changed your life having a practice?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think I was just ready for it too at that point in my life. I was receptive to it. So the timing was kind of everything. Probably would have been lost on me 15 years ago.
Isn't that amazing how something's so important now?
Yeah, I would have been like, I mean, or I just would have been only into the physical part, which I'm heavily into now, but there's a deeper level to that, which is why I really like it. It's a moving meditation, basically. And
yeah. I think since you learn the sequence and you have the anchoring of the breath, that it helps you kind of clear your mind and be in the present moment rather than listening to someone tell you what asana you're going to do. It's kind of automatic.
Oh, because Ashtanga is your a self-practice.
Yeah.
Right. So instead of going into a yoga studio.
It's Mysore style. So you go in there and you do your practice. And the teachers come around and they adjust you or give you some advice. But when you know your full practice and they just let you go, it's a nice way to, like you said, it's a nice way to start the day. Anchor your mind in the breath and then just, you know, move throughout the day a little bit more aware sometimes.
I mean, there are days I walk out of there, I don't even remember what I was doing for 2 hours. For me, that's big because I have a hyperactive mind. So
right. To
be able to shut it off for a couple hours is a way better way to start the day than starting going 100 miles an hour for me.
Because
I don't have any direction. My brain is just going all over the place.
Do you have any tools that you use during the day that the practice gives you to sort of reconnect to that?
Have you ever done like hypnotherapy?
Sure.
You know, like the anchor that you do? I used to do that in the beginning. You know, where you basically come up with a happy place and a trigger to take you to that happy place.
Mm-hmm.
And they put you under and kind of, you know, put that in your brain. And I used to do that kind of thing. And my happy place was actually being on stage.
Oh.
Which is...
Wow.
Yeah,
how does that work?
That was my happy place.
And it could still be your happy place.
It could. Yeah, under the right circumstances, it could be. But for me, it's just starting my day on that level, I think, is just keeps me on the right track during the day.
Mm.
And I think the practice just creates an awareness so that you become aware of when you're kind of veering off course and you can bring yourself back.
Mm.
Or just being aware that you just lost your shit is better than just losing your shit all the time and not thinking about it.
Right.
You know, whether you're a work in progress or not, if you're aware that you are, then you're miles ahead of,
right,
of where I was 10 years ago. Just angry all the time.
Yeah, it's that Gurdjieff quote. You remember that one?
What is it?
I mean, I'll bash it right now, but the basics of it is you have to know you're in prison before you can break out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And that's huge.
It's really huge. I think it's really underestimated.
Yeah. And it would have been totally lost on me 15 years ago.
Mm.
Would you be wasting your time?
Well, that's the proof of perception right there, then, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's it's pointless to look back and regret anything because it took all that stuff to get you here anyway.
And Rena, do you primarily do the physical, what they call asana part?
Yeah, it's just mostly asana for me.
Does Ashtanga offer more than just asana?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, I can't run off the eight limbs. There's yama, niyama.
Dharana.
Yeah, exactly. Pranayama.
Yama, yeah. Niyama.
That's
it?
Yeah. There's eight limbs.
Yeah. Pratyahara.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So, you know, you're supposed to go through them, obviously starting with asana, even though it's yama and niyama are first.
Well, asana's third.
Yeah, it is third, but in Ashtanga, they start with asana.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Because, interesting. I mean, there's people are coming together, it's the eight limbs, and they're already there to do the asana.
let's just do it. But if you were all together in a supermarket, it would be, let's all do the limb of shopping.
Yes. it's usually the asana that comes first, and obviously, you know, we try and do our best to just not be assholes, you know.
I think that's great.
Yeah.
And you know what I love about this whole thing too is, I mean, about this being able to do this podcast is to show people that your yoga doesn't have to look like somebody else's yoga. Mm-hmm. There's so much to yoga, and to just think.
Just taking a deep breath.
Dude, totally.
Instead of losing your shit.
Yeah.
Or surfing is yoga. I mean, like, whatever.
That's right.
Yeah.
Sex is yoga. Driving my car is yoga.
Mm-hmm.
And that confuses people, so you'll really have to just, you know, ask some questions and find somebody you really trust that you can ask what is yoga. Because when I first started, I thought yoga was just asana too.
Yeah.
And it's a big part of it here in the West. And it can be a great big part that you do your entire life.
Yeah.
And there could be nothing else, and that could be great and just fine. And there's other things that for people that maybe can't be so physical, there's more of the practice that I do now, which, you know, encompasses a lot of, you know, what we're talking about here. But I do asana too.
And you do service, you know, karma yoga too.
I mean, yeah. Absolutely karma yoga, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Without.
The guru question going backwards is, it's an interesting one. Like, does everyone need a guru? I mean, it's going to be completely lost on some people. So it totally depends. Are you ready for a guru?
Do you think you find your guru? Your guru finds you.
I think you find the guru that you're supposed to find.
Mm.
However, whether you climbed a mountain to find your guru or walked into the right yoga studio. And
what is your definition of a guru?
And got a good. Well, I mean, the guru is kind of your guide, I guess.
The speller of. What is it? What is the meaning of it? Dispeller of
darkness.
But he's Tim.
Tim kept me going back to that studio.
And you're talking about Tim Miller.
Mm-hmm. Tim Miller.
Yeah, Ashtanga.
He just kept me going back to yoga and sticking with it.
For me, if I would have been around and, you know, I would have been there to see Neema Karoli Baba tell you some shit that no one should know and that kind of stuff. Asking you how the cake was when you had cake for dinner last night, that kind of stuff.
What? Because you mean you need the proof.
I don't need it, but that would be, that would certainly get my attention. And, you know, I could be open to everything else, but something like that would, it's like when we saw Robert Peng.
And Qigong healer.
Yeah. And
we had him on. Oh, no, it wasn't the podcast. It was the Zooming in the Lens course. Yeah. He was a guest on the course.
But he he's a human being, and he put his finger to my forehead, and it was like electricity went through my head. Then he touched her, and I touched her, and I felt it even through her. And
wow.
I had no explanation for it, but it happened. I don't know.
It's interesting. I mean, those things, they used to matter to me, and they just don't anymore. I don't need that. I don't need cities. I don't need to find people that have powers. And I think a guru is so many things. I mean, you know, listen, opinions are like assholes. Everybody has one, right? So who knows? I mean, the lineage that I sort of lean more towards, Neem Crowley is my guru. And he's passed on. He's not even here. I don't believe you need to have a guru that is alive. And I believe that a guru is the way, and a teacher points the way, shows you the way, but isn't the way. So a guru is a big thing to say. I don't define it anymore, thanks to Ram Dass, because he's my teacher. So it's very clear to me that the difference between a guru and a teacher.
Yeah, like Tim's my teacher.
Yeah. But by the same token, I think when you're dealing in the world of practices like this, I think many people could show up in many different ways to many different people. And I think, yeah, exactly. And I think really what Neem Crowley Baba teaches me is faith in myself. Now, how is that happening? Do you think I'm sitting here with my rational mind going, I've never had a conversation with this person? How is that happening? I don't care. That's the fantastic part about it. I don't need him to really come here and tell me, oh, you sit under the sun and have donut last night? Or that doesn't make any sense because the sun is not in the nighttime. Okay. Anyway.
I'm so tired. I didn't even catch that.
I know. Well, I don't know. I used to need that. And you know what? Sometimes I freak out about the fact that I don't need it anymore. I get what I get. And I personally would love to have, a teacher at this point that I went and studied with for 9 months at a time or a year at a time. Probably wouldn't want to come back, but I'm kind of ready for, whatever life is going to throw at me at this point. But
you've got every tool in the toolbox.
I don't know about that.
Well, you have a lot of tools.
They're no good unless you have experiences with the tools.
Right.
Yeah.
But you have, I feel like that's part of it. It's like you don't need it because you got it. It's all
That's why I'm not rushing and doing it. Yeah. You don't need to go and get something. I mean, this is really available to everybody. Look at me. I mean, I really am the last person I ever thought would be here in a million years. I used to sit in New York and look on TV, and there'd be people from California on the TV, which is, where I'm living right now. And
it's the land of fruits and nuts.
And I would hear the word yoga, and I would be the leader of the eye roll in the room. The leader of the eye roll. I mean, Pete, come on, you're East Coast. I mean, have we ever really stopped to think about that? It's kind of mind-blowing. And instead of that blowing people's mind and saying, if Katrina could do it, anybody can do it, I think it more scares people and makes them go, if she's doing it, she's lost her fucking marbles.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? You're not ready. And you know what? You got to go out of your mind to, what was the saying? You got to go out of your mind to, oh, I love it. But, hey, that shows you I got too much shit in my head. I can't even remember one of my favorite things. Got to go out of your mind to come back into your mind, something like that. You have to go crazy a little bit. You are a little nuts when you do this. You are. You have to be a little crazy because it opens up a part of your imagination as if you've, been tripping for many years. And I haven't tripped in so many years at this point. I haven't done those kind of drugs. But the guru topic is really interesting to me because I think it comes, unfortunately, with a lot of stigma.
Absolutely.
You know, it does. And it puts people off. And
well, some people also think that this is going to be someone who's going to magically answer all their questions.
Right. Right.
Some people want a guru because they're looking for some kind of savior or something. That's not really the point.
That's not taking personal responsibility.
Yeah. Yeah. A guru to me is just someone who, however they do it, they put you on some path that then you have to stay on that and want to be on that path, or it's a waste of time.
You know who's on my puja?
Actually not a waste of time, but it's...
Jesus Christ is on my puja table, you know? And I have a Jewish prayer on my puja and an Islamic chant on my puja. Because it all starts to end in the end. It starts in different places and ends at the same mm-hmm. place. And the stuff that we protest the most, you know, yeah. I mean, a lot of people may look at my practice and think, it's the anti-happiness practice. At least I've been kind of accused of that. But I don't really see it like that. I never got anywhere prior to practice in trying to get happy and wanting to be happy. First of all, happy is relative, okay? Second of all, it's always going to change because you're always changing because the incarnation is ever-changing. So if you're going to go for happiness, you got to be on top of the ball every second of the day. I'd rather go for freedom because then I'm free and familiar with when shit's not happy, I can still be with myself in some capacity. And when I go for happy, it also depends on the happy that you're in. There's all sorts of different kinds of happiness.
Right.
So I think asana brings you guys happiness. Many times it brings me happiness. Other times it gives me like torn rotator cuffs.
Right. Sometimes it doesn't.
Correct.
Right. I think, but when we lean too heavy anywhere, right?
On anything. Yeah.
I mean, if we all lean so hard on the asana, mm-hmm. anything you're going to do in an extreme is not going to teach you or your body or your nervous system balance. So I think sometimes the biggest lessons and the biggest spirituality I get out of asana, besides the moving meditation part of it, is getting hurt and realizing how addicted you are to physically moving your body, whether it's the gym or running or mm-hmm. doing postures, and then having to practice what the other limbs that we should have been practicing were, because those are the ones that when the asana breaks your body down, mm-hmm. you're going to need surrender mm-hmm. and meditation. And, you know, it's really difficult to be practicing for 7 years. And I had to stop asana because not of an injury from asana, but I fell. And at some point, my body kept hurting, so to be sure that it wasn't the asana, I had to stop it for, you know, 4 months. What a practice that was for me.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you go through mental torture, then you feel lazy, then you're like, wow, now I'm, like, not doing that anymore, and that was just a thing I was doing. Oh, my God, the demons in your mind.
Oh, yeah.
They attack you.
Yeah.
But that doesn't happen so much to me because of, like you said, Pete, the times you fail. So maybe asana, I've had this thought many times, is third, because it's building you up, the first and second, yama and yama, mm-hmm. and then you do asana. And at some point, you're going to have to stop. And so it's like literally, it's being your guru and showing you the way. Because when you have to stop something that you've created a discipline and a lifestyle around because you can't move your left shoulder or you can't sit properly and your brain's trying to convince you it's not the asana and you have nothing to turn to, because all you're doing is asana. Asana is teaching you moving meditation. You walk, don't you? You wave, you grab a coffee with your hand and put it to your mouth. That's moving. Mm-hmm. Why can't moving meditation be in every part of your life? Why does it only have to be in a situation when we can't do it? You're not practicing. That's bullshit. To me, that's just lazy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we talked about this already. It's like, you know, yoga is driving. Yoga is, you know, it's not just on the mat.
It's your lemon clothes on.
Right. Yeah, I think practices are a lot more accessible than people think.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think part of that, that breaking yourself down, though, too, is it's an important part of asana.
Oh, my God. You're so right.
Vulnerability and showing what you can and can't do. And
how you handle yourself through it.
How you handle that rejection. Yeah, absolutely. And if it really bothers you, then you're missing the point.
Right. Well, or if it really bothers you, yum, 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 mm-hmm. because you're finding out where you need the work.
Yeah.
Yes. If you can do that on a mat, you could do that when your boyfriend breaks up with you or your girlfriend and other things happen in your life.
Yeah.
It's how you handle yourself through it way more than it is about what's actually happening. Because it's happened, right? It's already happened. It's done. There's nothing you can do about it. You could think, I should have done this. What if I had done this? What if I would have moved? What if I would have... And you can keep doing that, but just think about all the people out there that are like, I'm too logical for yoga. Are you kidding me? Yoga is about logic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's about saying, you just fell, you broke your ankle. Your ankle's going to stay broken, and you're going to stay in this situation. And you can also do other things with your mind and be in the present, or you can make it 10 times worse and sit here and wonder why this happened to you. What did you do to deserve it? I shouldn't have walked down that step. It was because I had that beer over and over and over again. And use your logic. How, if you can name one way that that's helping, do you have to move and you have to move suddenly? Do you just take skillful action? Or do you sit there and go, oh my God, I can't believe I have to move. I can't believe I have to move. I can't believe my landlord did this. I can't believe I have to do this. I'm never going to be able to get this done. What? Think about it. What is that doing for you? Name one thing. Have you ever had a great thought from a moment like that? That you've turned around and go, wow, if I didn't freak the hell out and stress out for that whole week and not sleep and get sick, I never would have come up with the solution.
Right.
It's like flying a cross-country flight, and as soon as you take off, you just open the fuel doors and let it all go. And are you going to make it the entire way? You probably know enough gas. You're knowingly doing it, so you're just flying along, and so you're going to crash and burn pretty soon.
Well, it's like losing your shit. Mina always does that to me. I start to lose my shit in traffic. It's not going to change anything.
That was the biggest change Tommy felt when we first started practicing.
It's just going to make it worse, dude.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to go a little over the edge to come back, you know.
Oh, yeah, I love that part, actually.
That's great, because I'm actually aware that it's happening now.
Yeah, which is way better than you were before.
Oh, it's such a great place to be.
And, I mean, you got to start somewhere. And if you're not noticing it, then you're either completely past that, and then that becomes the mundane or the normal. But, you know, all those, you know, you have to feel one thing and to understand its opposite and relate to its opposite.
We talked about it in a podcast before, you know, light and dark, you can't be, there's not happiness without sadness. And so you do have to peer over the edge and then step away.
I like to take a look over the edge.
Oh, you'll just let me have this for a second, all right? Let me be here for a second.
Do you say that?
Yeah.
I do, yeah.
I'm really glad to hear that.
Yeah.
I like saying that.
I do that all the time.
Just let me be here.
Let me just go over here.
Because we are like so constantly trying to get each other out of moods. Not because we don't want to see them upset. It's because we don't want to be around somebody upset.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's completely narcissistic.
No, seriously though. I mean, like, if I'm cool here, I don't need you losing your shit over
there. That's right.
But, you know, and it only happens for a second.
Just a second.
Just a quick sec.
Yeah, I really, that's such a good practice to walk around and let everybody be in their place.
Yeah.
And then you can maybe allow yourself to be sad and allow yourself to be scared. Because we're always trying to, I'm scared. Okay, well, what's it like to just be scared? We're always trying to get out of something. Very, very, that's practice. That's that practice. You don't need to even find a studio. I don't care if you're in Wyoming. Not that Wyoming is some, you know, isolated place, but you could be anywhere. If you're listening to this podcast, you obviously have the ability to get the internet. There are so many talks and recordings and just beautiful sharings from so many different people and so many great podcasts that you don't have to be able to move your body. You know, I deal with some handicapped people, some older people, and our practices don't consist of any movement. And you know, you don't walk in and say, okay, I'm not going to do any movement. It's, there's a naturalness to two people coming together and sharing a practice. You're sharing a part of yourself. You're coming back home. You're walking each other home. And to be in a satsang or a sangha, a community of people, like you guys have, it's not even like you have to talk. You could just be there in the room all doing the same thing, knowing I'm not who I think I am, but let's all be here moving our bodies, pretending that we are who we think we are. There's a lot of beauty in that. That's like for people not practicing, that one friend that you could always be yourself in front of. You could be shitty and they let you be shitty. You could be fantastic and happy and they don't try to bring you down off your high horse. You know, those, like, think of the definitions we have for friends. Like, that friend really puts me in my place. Oh, okay. What if that place is exactly where you need to be? I think that's why I use the word freedom instead of happiness. Because practice for me, it allows me to be in my fucked upness. And knowing it and still being in it, like you said, is so huge. And then you get people that say, okay, great. Well, now I know it. Now what? Go ahead and practice that for 10 years.
Yeah.
If that. And then worry about the next thing. I mean, what's it really like to know?
When you stop asking.
Right.
Then you'll know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I hated that. I remember hating
that. And then the trick is to forget that you know.
I think it just happens.
Yeah.
Everything unfolds. Oh man, I sound like a freaking cliche meme right now, but
you have to add then it's your journey.
Oh, and everything happens for a reason.
Oh, that's as good a place as any to make an exit.
Yeah. Well, here we are, right? Four friends sitting around. We'll have this forever. Just before we go, I just want to go around the room briefly and just answer one question. If you were 80-year-old Pete talking to you right now, what's one thing that 80-year-old Pete would say to you right now about life?
You're nothing.
But that today's Pete would say that to Pete.
80-year-old Pete, we all. Nice try.
Nice try.
Good effort. You almost got there.
Yeah.
Super cynical 80-year-old Pete to be all. Yeah. Good try.
Good try.
What I want 80-year-old Pete to say, or what 80-year-old Pete would say?
I don't even want you to put too much thought into it. I want you to just think 80-year-old Pete is going to give you a message that is some of a little bit of depth, right?
He's going to say, good job.
Good job. That's fine. That's deep.
That's it.
How often do people tell you good job? Not a lot.
Not very often.
Right. So maybe you can live good job now.
I like that. Yeah.
Actually, that turned out real well. That's you needed. 80-year-old Pete needed to tell you that.
80-year-old Pete needed to tell me good job.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't pretty, but good job.
And cut your hair.
Right.
What about you, Rena?
I don't know.
Enjoy the collagen.
Wow. That's heavy.
Oh, with this cold ever go away. Well, now you have to say something really profound to counteract.
No, I have nothing. I don't know. I don't know what I'd say.
80-year-old Rena.
80-year-old Rena would say to...
To you right now.
To me right now.
Think of something that maybe you obsess about, or maybe something that you're not so happy with.
Yeah, maybe you shouldn't have got so many animals.
Really? No. 80-year-old Rena wouldn't say that. Would she?
She'd say you didn't get enough animals.
Yeah.
Something about... I'm not going to say anything. Shut up, Katrina.
I don't know. I'm going to have to pass on that one. I just don't.
Okay.
You need to buy a vowel or something?
Yeah.
You want to call a friend?
Yeah, I need to find a friend.
You don't sweat the small stuff.
I usually don't sweat the small stuff.
So you're 80-year-old Rena.
No, I don't know. I don't.
I know what she'd say. Swim, you fish. Swim.
Right. Just keep swimming.
Just keep swimming.
Yeah, I don't know. I have to think about that one. It's a good question.
That's a good homework, right?
Yeah, that's good homework. Very good homework.
Yeah. What about you, Tommy?
My 80-year-old would look at me and say, mildly sarcastic with an obvious knowing of the answer of the question he's about to ask, but asked it anyway because of the irony of the situation, he would say, what the fuck is wrong with you?
I was just thinking that. I'm just kidding.
That's what he would say.
That's what he would say?
He would say, seriously, really? What is wrong with you? Fucking work it out.
In what? About what?
Figure it out. Figure it out what's important. You're messing around in the wrong camp over there. It's not on that shit over there is important.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, what is wrong with you?
What does that feel like? Like if you were to actually, if there was a time machine and I was to give you a note from your 80-year-old self, would you listen?
I would need proof that it was actually.
Here we go again, yeah. Him and his cities.
Well, listen, it comes from somewhere else. I mean, it's...
My 80-year-old self.
Anyone can just say that. Oh, here I pulled this out of a time machine. Oh, my God, really?
What are these numbers on the back of it?
I mean, I'm not that gullible, am I?
I think to get the lesson, you just stop thinking so much, feel more, listen to your own words.
All right. Well, it would be nice, though, if somebody professed that they had a letter from the future from my 80-year-old self, that it would be true and real.
Well, nice. Isn't that ironic that your 80-year-old self is telling you to stop thinking about that stuff, get to what really matters? And what really matters is that you stop looking for proof.
I don't know.
Because you can't have faith.
You know,
a lot of religions started with someone coming back and saying, I have these, that was given these letters.
Yes.
He comes and he goes. What can I say?
These words.
Imagine if we, got the Ten Commandments and then Moses says, you know what? This is great, but it's just a little bit of writing on stone. Like, I need some proof. I need to, know where these came from exactly.
I think he knew where they came.
Yeah, but when he went and told everybody where he got them, nobody believed him. So
there's no way you would believe that
ridiculous story. No, of course nobody believed him. What kind of, I mean,
I don't know if that's what I think the point is like, there is no proof of anything. And the fact that we're all looking for it, and I'm talking to myself here, I'm a science geek. I love science, but science is the study of, it gives you nuggets in which to be inspired about possibility. But we're all taking science. I'm not, so I'll be a little judgy right now and say a lot of people take science as fact and as proof. You know what it's proof of? What you already know. There's so much possibility, and life can be inspiring, and the little nuggets that science gives you, take them and run with it in a personal way, in a way you can apply it in your daily life. It doesn't always need to be outside of yourself. It's right there. It's the secret hidden in plain sight.
Can I get an amen? Amen.
So thank you for listening to Zooming in the Lens podcast. Oh yeah, I didn't answer. My 80-year-old self.
Would you sound like Katharine Hepburn?
Can you give me a little foreplay?
I just did.
No,
Rena. Katharine Hepburn on Golden Pond.
Rena's going to give me a little foreplay.
Like, what would your 80-year-old self, like, here she comes out of the time machine herself. You see her. And she says to you,
you're safe. You don't need to be so scared. And you don't need to try so hard. It's all right there. And I love you. I think that's what she would say.
She would say, I love you, I think.
No, she would say, I love you. Everybody needs to hear.
Everyone needs to hear that.
Everybody needs to hear about love. I really do think that's at the bottom of everything is love. I'm a little boctified, but.
I think she'd say it because I had her. She was holding me like this.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I do feel like she would say that. You know, we're all scared. Mm-hmm. We're all scared. I mean, anybody that says they're not, I don't care how tough guy you are, tough chick you are, there's fear in everything, and it wastes so much time in so many things. So I hope there's some nuggets in there, and I want to thank Pete and Rena for joining in on Zooming in the Lens podcast, and we miss Sass. We did this without her because in Canada it's really, really late.
It's late and here.
She'd kill me.
Yes, it's late.
And it's late here. But thank you, everybody. And if you're interested in the Zooming in the Lens course, we're in the middle of group two right now, but we're going to start to gear up for group three, which is going to probably happen at some point in August of this year. And you can always go to functionalyogaonline.com or ramdas.org/zooming, ZOOMING. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in, and we will speak to you soon. Bye.
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 Music and editing, special thank you to Ian Hatton. If you'd like more information on Ian, go to mixforpix, mixforpix.com.